Today on The Breakdown, you know, we're just having a conversation just before we started, me saying Today on The Breakdown and me hitting record, about how in spy movies, or not really spy movies, but maybe it's going to turn into a spy movie. Maybe I'm being spied upon. There might be a bug in this thing. We need to have a conversation and not let those people hear us kind of movies or TV shows, because everything's streaming now, Grant. That what they do is they invite the person and they say, hey, come on in here. And the person's like, what are you doing? And then suddenly the first person who knows what's going on puts their hand up and everyone stops talking sort of awkwardly and jarringly, right? It's very abrupt. Hey, what are you doing? Why are you going to the... This is what you'd hear if you were listening in. And then suddenly, surprisingly loud music that no one would ever listen to is turned on very, very loudly. Do you think the people who are listening in don't know what's going on? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're going to listen to freaking Blink 182 again really loudly because they love Blink 182. This is a classical music household. You know what I'm saying? Why are they listening to it so loud? No human would ever do so. They're clearly having a conversation right now. The person comes in. They're like, I need to talk to you. It's very important. It has to do with state secrets. It's, I want to push you around. Yeah, I will. It's like that, you know? Like, come on. I don't know. I just feel like this is like the stormtroopers always missing in Star Wars. Like, come on, man. I expect more from the totalitarian states in these movies and TV shows. Also, on The Breakdown, we are going to do... I did a whole rant there. We're going to do a hand. We're going to break down a hand. And it's going to involve Stephen Chidwick, everyone's favorite spider-like man, perhaps. Long and lanky. And he's in the main event. And the question is, can you ever successfully pull a move off on Stephen Chidwick? Is it worth trying? Should we ever consider trying? Should we try it in the main event? Well, this man is going to try. Not Stephen Chidwick, this other man. Because Stephen Chidwick trying to bluff himself would be problematic, to say the least, perhaps against the rules. Anyway, we're going to get to it right now in The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Oh, boy.
What a whirlwind.
I mean, you're supposed to save that for, like, this part.
That's... I know, but it was out of my head. I'm like, I'm going with it.
I think that was, you went too far.
Really?
With the opening.
It was, like, too long or just too
much? No, it's just, like, that's not what the opening's for.
I'm breaking things. That's my whole job, is to break things.
Come on. It's not 2006 in Silicon Valley where everybody's like, I just go to a VC and say, move fast and break things, and they give me $1 billion. It's not that anymore. Now they're like... You have to make 7 apps, and I'll give you royalties for the ads that we put on there.
There is a very loud section of Twitter that feels I'm not disrupting this podcast enough.
Uh-huh. And right. Yeah. Of
very,
course.
Very vocal.
I haven't seen. I guess we're in just like we're siloed on this because I haven't seen this.
You know how the algorithm is, man. It finds out what you like. You're always going to get your baking soda porn or whatever it is you're looking
baking
at.
Baking soda porn.
And I'm,
yeah.
You know, I'm getting the good stuff.
I cannot
stuff.
Believe. The disrespect you've shown me. It's baking powder.
You know, I didn't think of that as disrespect, but I see it now. I see how that is disrespect.
I think you're only saying you see it because we're on a podcast right now. I don't think you actually see it, and I think this is going to require some work on your end
to
get to the point where we're in a mutual respect zone, which is what I like to call the place that is happy. The mutual respect zone. The arena of mutual respect.
I just want to say this. I feel like I can see it and not respect you. Okay, I do see it. I see it. But I'm humoring you also. I get it, but I'm humoring you. And that's how I like to do my friendships and relationships. No. I get it. I get why you're upset, and I'm going to humor you.
All right. Secondarily,
yeah.
I hope that you knew when you were doing it that the song you sang was not Blink 182.
Of course I know. Okay. That. No, I couldn't. It's like Rob Thomas was the name of the lead singer. I can't remember the name.
Oh, Matchbox 20.
That's what I couldn't get the name. I knew there was a number in there, so I said Blink 182 because they also have a number in their name. But then I did the, the song that Blink 182. See, Matchbox 20 does, and that's what happened.
I'm surprised you didn't go with Sum 41.
741.
Sum 41.
What's that?
You don't know Sum 41?
No. Is this getting recorded? Can everyone hear that very loud? It's like there's someone's body is getting put it through a wood chipper right now.
I don't
now.
Think they can hear it. These microphones are very good.
Okay. I can hear it. All right.
Sum 41. You don't know Sum 41?
What is
It's like a contemporary band with Blink-182 that was the Canadian version of Blink-182, and they were very popular. They were more popular than Matchbox 20, I think.
That's impossible.
I think they
Matchbox 20 was crazy popular, bro.
Maybe they weren't more popular, but they were very popular.
Sum 41. Get the fuck out of here. You're making this up.
I am not making this up.
Is it S-U-M?
Yeah,
like S-U-M. We added it
you
together?
Actually don't know Sum 41?
No, I've never heard of them.
Really?
Can you name it? Don't look. Have you already looked? Don't look. Name their most popular song. They're so popular. More popular than Matchbox 20. I can't name any of
those
songs.
Name Matchbox 20's most popular song.
Push, the one I was just singing.
Okay, fine.
Clearly. That was like number one for years.
Okay, so their most popular album was called Fat Lip. I remember this.
Okay. So you don't know any of their songs.
Yes, I know their songs. I just can't
Sum
remember.
Sum 41. I know their songs. I just can't think
I
of
swear,
any of them.
I swear they have popular songs. I just can't remember the names. Motivation is one, but that's not their most popular one. Damn, what is that?
How about Into Deep?
Yeah, that's their most popular
is
song.
Is it?
Yeah.
I just, a little Google search is all Grant.
I didn't look because you told me not to.
I'm glad you didn't look.
Yeah. I'm in too deep and I'm trying to keep put blood in my head instead of going under. You don't know that song?
No. And by the way, Fat Lip looks like it was on, wasn't the name of the album. Maybe they had an album also called Fat Lip. Fat Lip is a song on the album All Killer, No Filler.
Oh, that's what it is then. Fat Lip is also a popular song.
Wow. Yeah.
You genuinely had never heard of them.
I swear to God, I've never heard of Sum 41. It's possible if I actually heard them playing their music.
I'm sure you have.
I recognize that.
I'm sure you have.
You fucking talking about Matchbox 20 as if these guys are in the same fucking universe. You know, they're not. Oh, also 3 a.m. is another really popular Matchbox. So
I know that one.
That's very popular.
Yeah.
Also, If You're Gone, Baby, It's Da-da-da. That's another one.
Okay.
That was pretty popular. Those are the only ones. Oh, Bent was a popular song for a while, too. I'm just looking this up. I wouldn't know.
I wanted to get to something pretty early in this podcast.
Yeah.
That is not being gotten to. And we're actually really, really just kind of just smashing my point to bits by what we're doing right now, unfortunately. But I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
Because we use Spotify for podcasters to publish our stuff because it's free and it's pretty good. But anyway, they have this automatically clicked option when you publish that has a Q&A, and they have an automatic Q&A question, which is, what do you think of this episode? And I never think to like disable the Q&A questions. I don't think anybody's really looking at them. Yeah. But we've gotten like a couple answers, mostly that are just like, great job. Oh. But we got one that was not great on a recent one that was, timestamps would be nice. You really know how to hold your audience hostage. And I wanted to say to that person,
yes.
Do you know how to fucking read?
Oh.
Because... like, and if you are in the camp of this person, do you know how to read? Because there is a timestamp.
Did you look and see to make sure there was a timestamp on that episode?
There was. And to be fair to this person, this was an episode where the timestamp said 32 minutes is where the analysis begins. So if they really didn't look, that's a long wait.
Poor person. Is it possible? Sorry, go ahead.
But... In every episode, it says scroll down to see where analysis begins because some of the listeners who really like the opening don't want to know how long the opening is because they want to be surprised. So then you scroll down and you see this is when the analysis begins and you don't have to listen to all this stuff.
See, I think what we've just bumped into right now is a classic powerful person, which somehow I'm making you the powerful person.
Thank you. Thank you.
Enjoy this moment because this is it. This is the apex of your life. You've just hit it.
That was really mean.
Well, okay, this and your daughter, fine, being born or something.
Oh, so it's somebody else is the apex of my life.
Okay. You just assume that because you put in one timestamp that you know what the person was talking about and it's solved and they're idiots. But the person actually said timestamps would be nice and holding a person hostage. And my guess is that they're complaining as much about the length of the ad that we do, which is an unknown amount of time as well, and maybe feels hostage to that and you would know, like a timestamp for that as well.
Fuck them anyway.
That's fine. But I'm just saying, you're like, these people are so idiots and can't read and so this and can't that.
It's not exactly that. And you know exactly what I'm saying that happens on the internet all the time where people make a comment without doing any of the research based on their comment.
Of course. But it seems unlikely that that was true in this case because they said timestamps.
I mean, come on. Just using a plural does not absolve that.
I guess up with our audience, you guess down. When they do something that is halfway legible, I'm like, that was brilliant, and there's a really good intention behind that, and it's smart. And you're like, once again, our audience are morons. How many times have you said that exact sentence to me off air?
650 minimum. No, of course, yeah. Audience are the ones who actually read the description are very smart.
Yeah. I mean, or they don't read the description, but they don't complain about it, right?
Yeah.
So it's really just this one person.
Yeah, this person's an idiot.
I don't know that that's true, and I'm going to continue to defend the defender of the basic world. That's me.
All right.
I defend the basic world. Not that this person is basic, and I don't even see why basic is a fucking put down anyway.
You don't?
I'm from the 70s.
You're from the 70s? Like you time traveled from here?
I mean, I grew up in the 70s, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, that's not a bad thing. It's good to be basic. Who wants to be complicated?
Was that a compliment in the 70s? Is this what you're telling me?
No, I wouldn't say that, but it wasn't a put down. And I don't really understand why it's a put down.
What was
really.
What was a common put down? Jive turkey? Your jive turkey?
Oh, it was all homophobia.
Oh, okay.
That was the whole thing. The whole game. Jive turkey is good. A JT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did people actually use that abbreviation or did you just make that up?
Well, that's from Semi Pro.
Oh.
From one of the great scene in Semi Pro.
I don't remember. I haven't seen that movie since it came out, basically.
I'm not going to do the whole thing, but it's worth finding on YouTube when. Somebody calls somebody else. They're all hanging out playing cards or something like that, and someone calls someone else a jive turkey, and what happens? It is fabulous, and it's like, you know, a 4-minute scene, and it ends with like one of the all-time great, in my opinion, like moments in a comedy. That's a little strong, but a really good, like a top 200 moment in a comedy or something like that.
So as far as Will Ferrell moments in his movies that you really like, where does this rank against the other guy's moment with Mark Wahlberg where they're debating the tuna versus the lion?
Great
or whatever.
Question, yeah. And that is a really comparable type of scene, by the way, in terms of like enjoyment for me. The thing is, Will Ferrell is not the funny part of this scene. It's the other guys who are really funny in this scene. So in that way, for Will Ferrell moments, it's clearly the tuna versus lion. But this is a really good scene, too. These are two, like, all-time classics. I've watched them both on YouTube a million times. Like, yeah, the jive turkey scene. And at one point, because someone calls someone else a jive turkey, and someone gets very offended, and they're like, hey, I don't think anyone called anyone a JT, you know? He called you a cocksucker. He called you this. He called you that, you know? And, like, you know, because jive turkey is the worst thing you can call someone.
Right, apparently. In the 70s.
And that's what they went with. And they really sell it well.
Okay, guys.
It's good.
I like that concept.
Yes.
Because it's a very strange insult from a strange time.
Yes. You jive turkey. That's how you say it, too.
Yeah.
Jive.
I'm sure it has an interesting origin, but I'm not willing to look it up. Anyway.
Great.
Should we just get to the hand?
Okay.
Because it's an interesting one.
Okay.
This was suggested by three of our brilliant listeners.
Three?
Chris Jones.
Are you sure they're brilliant? Are you sure they read the show notes?
They haven't complained.
They complain internally, though, probably a lot. By the way, Chris Jones complains all the time. Anyway, yeah. Chris Jones.
Kev and Spirit Airlines with a Z.
The Z.
Yeah.
So it's like
Z. That's two for Spirit Airlines and Kev in recent.
Yeah.
Recent number. They're new on the block.
You know what? This is where they're still trying it out. They're like, they put their toe in the water. They're like, it's not so bad in here. You know what? This could be my new thing. And you know what, guys? It could be.
It could be your new. You could be a breakdown suggester. That could be your entire life.
You like playing the little clips where we talk about you to your friends and family.
Yep.
That's Mark Testart did it.
And on your deathbed, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I would just want at my funeral for every clip where the poker guys are talking about my Discord handle to be like on loop.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that sounds like a noble passing. It's a noble passing.
It's like, wow, they really did suggest a lot of it.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
Poker guys hated that dude, but they kept having to say it anyway at Chris Jones.
We don't hate you, Chris Jones.
No, actually, we like you.
You're a lovely man.
Yeah.
6K, 12K.
Yes.
Day 4 of the main event.
Okay.
We are early in the money. So there's this guy. I don't know his first name.
Oh, God.
Because Maria Ho had dubbed him Mr. Wu, and they kept calling him Mr. Wu.
Okay.
So we'll just call him Mr. Wu, too. Or Wu.
Fine.
And, he's like just this guy who I don't think he's got much of a Hendon. If I remember correctly, they talked about it. He doesn't have, like, a ton of results or anything. But he was the star of the show for a couple hours.
His name is Andrew Wu, by the way.
Andrew Wu. Okay. Does he have a Hendon?
That is going to take a little bit longer. I'm going to know soon.
It's going to be 5 to 10 seconds for Andrew Wu's Hendon. Get excited. Andrew Wu. Yeah, so he was just doing a bunch of stuff that was very aggressive and not scared at all.
He has a Hendon.
Okay, let's see. Let's hear it.
I'm just going to take out the money he won from this World Series. Do you want to make a guess before I say anything?
No, I do not.
Okay. It's like $90,000.
Okay. Yeah, so he's not a pro. He's just a guy who plays poker and plays it aggressively. And something that I definitely noticed in other hands, because I watched about 2 hours around the time that this hand happened, and I was enjoying watching Mr. Wu play.
Oh, really?
Because he played not scared and just basically his own style.
Okay.
Which in a lot of times were like fundamentally what I thought errors, but it didn't matter because it was just different. And it was like, maybe I want to like think about these things a little bit more. Like he just used big sizing a lot, which is not necessarily the case in this hand in all cases, but like he would bet pot, flop, pot, turn, and C bet like all ranges. He's like Barry Greenstein in 2004.
Yeah.
And it was interesting.
Was there anything else that really stood out to you beyond
there
that?
There were some hands that stood out, but it's been a while and I can't remember.
Okay, but he's C-betting a lot and he's betting big.
Yeah, and he's like entering a lot of pots and very willing to mix it up.
So he's a big dynamic at the table.
Yes, he is.
Chidwick knows what everyone's doing because that's his job, but he is it's impossible for him to miss what's going on with this guy.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes, he is probably the dynamic at the table.
Cool.
Because I don't believe Rigby's at this table, although he was at almost every feature table until he busted on day six, was it?
Something like that.
Yeah. All right, so Wu has 893,000 at 6K, 12K.
Okay.
Pretty nice on day four. Pretty nice.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah, like 75 bigs. He opens Jack 10 off from the low jack to 37K. There's the big sizing.
Yeah. Wow.
37K at 612. And, you know, there's like that 2013, 14, 15 moment where it felt like preflop sizing in a tournament really determined how good a player was. Like it just felt like you could tell, you know?
Yeah.
But that's obviously ridiculous. And there's variable sizings that are okay and there's reasons for different sizings. And I'm not saying that I advocate for bigger sizing in general, but it's not necessarily indicative of bad play.
I mean, okay, fine. But, you know, like all things in poker, we have to stereotype, right? Like to make decisions. So if someone chooses unusual sizing, we're going to immediately note that and we're going to make some guesses about them. And we're going to watch them a little closer and continue to make better and better guesses, right?
All right. And I'm not saying that Wu is thinking this out. Maybe he is. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But let's say for a second that we are, from first principles, constructing a strategy for the main event day four where the average stack is 60 bigs or something and we have 75. Do you think it's reasonable to consider some larger sizing pre-flop in these cases? Because, you know, just table captaining in the main event for a while is pretty good and you can probably do that a bit more effectively with bigger sizing. And the structure is such that if you lose a couple of these and you're deep enough that it's not like killing you, you know, a big reason for the smaller sizing is the finite amount of chips in tournaments. And when you have 35 blinds, making it 3X versus 2X can hurt over time. But when you have 75 and there's 2 hour levels and everybody's really deep and they're more incentivized to call the smaller bets, is there maybe some strategic good to come from 3X plussing in these stages of events like this?
I think it all comes down to what kind of fold equity are people getting at the smaller sizing, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're 2.1xing it or min raising, like at the final table of the World Series this year, they were min raising and absolutely getting it through a bunch.
Yeah.
So why would you ever 3x if that's the case, right? That seems like almost, now maybe against certain opponents you would still 3x. Guys in the certain big blind, who's in the big blind is going to defend more or based on a stack size, it makes more sense to do that. But to me, mostly that's what it's about. I'm curious to see if you have other.
I have a few other thoughts.
Oh, good.
So you're thinking mostly about the big blind defense.
Right. I am.
So Wu's opening from the low jack.
Yeah.
How likely do you think it is that there's a difference in the amount of times that he's in position in this hand when he opens this size versus a min open?
I don't think there's much difference. I would think if someone is trying to play against Wu and calling on the button, they're probably calling for two or for three with almost, maybe not 100% frequency, I'll grant you, but nearly the same frequency.
Maybe. But I mean,
if he's 4Xing, that would be different.
There's a potential benefit there, I think, to get yourself positioned more frequently.
Yeah, I don't think it would really depend on your opponents again. If they start flatting a lot, and then you see the kinds of hands they're flatting with, especially because you're on the feature table, so you actually do get to see, at some point you'll be like, all right, I got to bump it up a little bit. They're calling me with 9-10 off on the button because
I'm putting in so many chips pre-flop and he's so good. Like, yeah. I have to start making 3x or 3.5x even, you know, and let's see if he calls now with those hands, you know,
yeah.
And he probably won't.
This is a type of thing that we used to, when we played more like daily tournaments and stuff, mess around with, you know, like
absolutely.
When we made our limping strategies and stuff like that. Like, I would like to try, if I were going to play a bunch of like, you know, $100 daily tournaments, I would like to try like 4xing for a while and see how that affected how things went.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's cool to fuck with the buttons anyway. And actually being at a table with good players who believe you're good, you know, and then doing a weird sizing because they're all paying attention.
Yeah.
It throws them off, you know, like you can confuse them for a little while now. It's like, what are you doing that with? And what the hell? Where did that come from?
Yeah, I remember very much when we were doing the limping strategy, I didn't like announce it to anybody.
Of
and
course.
There were a couple guys who I would play with every day who were like the other good players who played that tournament every day. And the first time I limped, they both had the weirdest look on their face, just like so confused.
Yeah.
They were so surprised. And that moment alone was worth it. It was cool.
I did this thing. This is a cash game and it's limit hold'em, but it holds, which is this guy who I'd been playing, who was a regular in the game that I was playing, you know, 4 times a week or 3 times a week back in the day when I was a pro. He was also there. He was a good player and he was there every day. And he raised an early position. I defended the big blind with ace queen off, which is a totally standard thing to do as opposed to 3-bet, which you could do, but mostly you don't. I flopped an ace and I check called. And in limit hold'em, you just don't do that. You check raise ace queen.
Yeah.
Because they call you down. So you just want to get more value. But I check called flop, check call turn in, and went check, check on the river. And I turned over ace queen and it messed him up for like 2 years against me.
Huh.
He just didn't know. He just couldn't understand then what else I was check calling with from then on. And when I check raids, he just didn't know what kind of, he couldn't range me anymore.
Is that why you did it?
Yes.
Cool.
I just wanted to show him different lines with the same hand, so it wasn't so easy for him. And it really paid off.
Cool.
Yeah. Like, it got a lot more, he had to be less aggressive against me in certain spots, because if I check raised the flop, he could put me on a very particular range and also put my calling hands on a very particular range, and now he just couldn't do it.
Yeah. Cool.
It's great.
Excellent.
Anyway.
So Wu opens to 37K.
Okay.
From the low jack with jack 10 off.
He's like, 3X isn't enough. It's 3X plus another 1,000. Yeah. So for any of you bargain seekers out there, get out of here.
From the low jack with jack 10 off, by the way, which is like, I'm really trying to be the table captain.
Yeah. Weird with Stephen Chidwick in the hand, or in play here, too, like that you try and be the table captain.
Who the fuck cares about Stephen Chidwick? I'm Mr. Wu.
Yeah, it's true.
I am the captain.
Yeah, he may not know who Stephen Chidwick
That's
is.
That's quite possible. Chidwick just looks like a guy with a hat.
Yeah.
You know?
Really tarantula. Dude.
Yeah, well, he's a Slender Man.
Yeah. But not Slenderman.
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 So Chidwick. It falls to Chidwick, who's in the small blind.
Okay.
And he's got 704K. He's the effective stack between them with, a reasonable stack, but not monster stack. Well over 50 bigs. He's got ace jack off.
Here we go.
So what do you do?
I mean, I would put in the 3-bet. This guy's opening a lot. If I was on the button, I would consider calling this. If I was in the big blind, I would certainly call it. If I had position, I think I would consider calling against this opponent who's betting pot flop, pot turn a lot.
Yeah.
The small blind, I just, you know my philosophy on this. Like, mostly I don't want to call here, especially with a hand like this, which doesn't play super well multi-way, and we're going to be out of position three ways a lot if we flat. Although maybe less so because it's a 3X.
Yeah, that helps.
Oh, it being a 3X, maybe we can get away with more calls.
Yeah, the big blind is not going to call nearly as much.
Yeah, they're not. They're going to be like, I'm getting a good price in quotes, but like it's the main event. I'm not just going to stick some chips in.
And I'm not saying this is every big blind, but if I were in the big blind and Stephen Chidwick were in the small blind and he flats the 3X, I'm folding a lot of hands that could be dominated by his range there. That I would,
such as
like King 10 off, I might just fold.
Really?
No.
For an extra blind?
No, King 9 off though. I think I might just fold, which I wouldn't fold for a min open.
I get that.
Yeah, because Chidwick's range is pretty well defined by flatting the 3X.
I mean, he can just have a lot of medium pocket pairs, but I hear you. Like, all his kings are crushing you, clearly, right? When it's a 3X, he doesn't have King 5 suited anymore.
No,
right?
He does not.
Yeah. That's fair. That's cool.
So, yeah, I don't mind flatting here.
Flatting is okay because it's a little more than 3X, especially if our... If the big blind is relatively short, it's even better. If they have like 15 blinds or something like that, where it's sort of jam or fold, where we can actually call the jam if it's a squeeze play type thing, if we wanted to.
I don't know if that's the case, and it's unlikely because, you know, it's relatively deep stacks on average at this point.
But you never know.
Yeah.
It's day 4, like some people are short. But anyway, But it makes it better. My inclination is still mostly to three bet just because I hate being out of position to two players and with a hand that often only makes one pair, you know, and doesn't have like a lot of, it's hard to make straights and flushes with this hand.
I've always been a bigger advocate of calling out of the small blind than you have.
You sure have.
And I think that it might be just born of my experience three betting out of the small blind with hands like this, where it just always feels shitty when like you get called
you're
and
just bluffing. I mean, you're bluffing, although against a guy like Wu, you might just be doing this for value anyway.
And maybe things have changed, but you know, there was a time when everybody was three betting out of the small blind pretty much any time they entered the hand out of the small blind, which is, you know, has gone back and forth, but it's no longer that way.
For sure.
And all of the good players would recognize that and, you know your range was a lot wider from three betting out of the small blind than anywhere else. And then you're in the worst position at the table and the good player who's in position against you knows that your range is shit.
Right.
Like, that sucks.
That does suck. I don't three bet that much from the small blind, but I don't three bet that much in tournaments early on anyway. You know, when we're deep, I mostly want to let people make big mistakes post-flop.
I three bet a lot more in tournaments when we're deep than I used to. I think mostly for isolation. Mm. Isolation is very valuable.
Well, then why don't you want to isolate from the small blind, especially against this guy?
If I have no fold equity, which is possible against Wu, I just don't love it. I'd rather just take my pretty good hand to the flop and figure it out. I'm better than him.
Yeah. Okay. My inclination is mostly to three bet this hand. Even having said all of that, we have a pretty good hand that makes sense to three bet. We often are going to have Wu in trouble. He might continue with worse hands because I don't know, but considering all the things you're telling me about him, he feels like a candidate to have a worse ace or a king jack and call a three bet.
Yeah.
So that's good. I like knocking out the big blind for isolation. I also like having the lead in the hand a little bit more. Although again, if the guy's going to go pot, lead in the hand isn't so important.
Yeah. I mean, if I look at it fundamentally, I think my reasoning ultimately is not only just that it sucks to three bet from the small blind and be out of position against players who know that your range is bad. If we just look at it from the fundamental standpoint that being in position is better than being out of position.
For sure.
Let's put in more chips when we're in position than when we're out of position.
Right.
That's kind of the long and short of it for me, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Anyway, he flats. The big blind folds.
Okay.
Pass 98K. We got Jack 10 against Ace Jack.
I mean, if we knew the big blind was going to fold, and based on this opponent, I think we'd be really happy to flat here.
Yeah, and you know, we can assume the big blind's going to fold with some frequency when it's the 3X.
Some, but they're also getting 6, 7, 8, 4 to 1. A little 4 to 1 on a call to close the action. So they're going to call with a bunch of stuff.
I mean, especially in a deep structure, though, also, it's fine just to tread carefully in multi-way pots and not play high variance with hands like this out of position.
Well, hands like this, but like, I mean, if they have 8-10 off, are they folding? They shouldn't, right?
Oh, that's fine. What I'm saying is that's fine.
Okay.
Like, it's okay to sometimes lose the pot. Like, it's not a huge deal.
Well, it just is, you know, if by calling, we're inviting that possibility more so. That's all. But, okay.
Anyway, 98K in the pot.
It's been a running debate for like 7 years.
It has.
Continuing. 98K in the pot or whatever. How much? 98.
Okay. Nitro betting is 98% as good as good as the best thing you could possibly imagine.
Phew.
So it's the best thing available.
We're this close to losing our sponsorship.
I know. What I'm saying is it's the best thing available, but it's only at 98% of its optimal capacity.
The best thing you could possibly imagine is available? Like chocolate ice cream is the best thing I could possibly imagine.
Well, then
mushroom
you don't,
pizza is
what,
the best thing.
What I will tell you is that you don't have enough imagination then, sir.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Do these morons even read?
Are you one of those people? I know you're not. But, you know, every once in a while you see a thing on the internet about people who are shocked that people have internal monologues.
Mm.
Have you seen this?
No.
Where they're like, I just learned that my girlfriend has an internal monologue and they're speaking in their head when they're thinking and it's shocked me. Like, apparently there's like a big subset of the population that does not have an internal monologue. They just... I don't know how they just have thoughts without words.
Are they smarter or dumber than folks like me?
I don't know.
Yeah, you do.
Based on population statistics, smarter. Just based on where you fit generally in the intelligentsia.
Yeah.
No, of course. But isn't that weird? Because you have an internal monologue, right?
A million percent. Yeah. I'm an only child. I have an external monologue a lot, too.
I don't think it has to do with experience. I think it's just like brain function differences.
I wonder if people just aren't, if it's semantics a little bit too, if someone is like,
but I don't think it is, because you guarantee like 100% know you have an internal monologue, right?
I do, yes.
And it's pretty easy to define that.
It seems like
it is
would
your
be.
Brain is making words as you think, basically.
But someone might be thinking like where it's, I don't know. Let's. I'm not going to fight you on this one. I feel like I fight you on everything. I'm going to let this
you
one
do
go.
Fight me on everything.
I'm just going to, got to pick some battles.
I just
to let
brought
go.
Up an interesting thing and you don't have to fight me.
Yeah,
on
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I don't know if I don't know if it's, I agree, but I'm going to let it, I'm not going to keep putting up the walls.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We'll look some of this stuff up later.
Nitrogen sports. Nitro sport. Nitro betting.
Name the sponsor correctly.
Nitro betting, where all your internal monologues come to life.
Yeah, they'll steal them all. But that's okay, because you get the sick promotions when you use the link.
That's how sick it is.
Yeah, it's bad for you, but it's fine.
Light cough.
Yeah. Use the link in the description to get the promotions. They include many sports betting promotions, such as March Madness, NFL Survivor pools, stuff like that. NFL season's coming up. They might be throwing something our way. We'll see. Mm-hmm. You won't know unless you use the link, though. You got to use the link. That gets you access to the Poker Guys monthly tournament, and it makes you one of our people, which don't you want to just be wrapped in Jonathan's bosom?
I mean, yes.
Of course, everybody does.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, it's warm.
Warm.
It's yes, warm.
It's very warm.
Yeah. That's like a Scottish accent I'm going with. So sure. Anyway, Nitro Betting, get in there. Use the link. Play the poker. Get the sports betting. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for something.
Go ahead. Say your thing.
No. You finish.
I'm done. Go ahead.
I don't think you are done. I think you're acting like you're done. And I don't appreciate it. I want you to complete your whole thing. Oh, we're doing the silent treatment. He's nodding. He's nodding. See, so the plan is what? What do I have to do a thing now before you talk? Is that it? Yes, he's nodding. Yes, with a very like smug look. His eyes are all squinty and stuff right now. He's doing the thing where he's smile frowning. You know, where his face is technically a frown, but he's smiling. You know that look, right? He's doing it right now as he drinks water out of a mug. It's upsetting. It doesn't work. The thing I was going to do doesn't work doing it right now. That's the whole thing. I had to wait till you're completely done. It had to be like, we're just restarting the podcast. Then I was going to do the thing and it was going to be perfect. And now it can't be. And now
you know what it's like to be derailed.
We did it. We got him to talk.
No, you don't
win. We got him to talk victory.
You didn't win that one. All right, back victory. To the hand.
Okay.
We're not doing your thing. 98K in the pot.
You better call a doctor. That was the thing. I did it.
That's see? It?
Yeah.
All right. Congratulations. 98K in the pot.
Okay.
Chidwick is in the small blind with ace of diamonds, jack of clubs. Wu is in the low jack of diamonds, 10 of hearts. Flop is ace, 4-5, rainbow.
Okay. Pretty good.
Yep. Pretty good for Stevie Chidwick.
Stevie Chidwick.
No reason to do anything but check here.
Oh, my. For Steven?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be insane. This guy bets big on flops. This is like sort of the whole plan, right? Was to flop like this and go check, call, check, call, check, call, and hopefully win a lot of chips because he's betting too much. Right?
Yep. And Wu should bet this flop, right? It's an ace high rainbow board. Chidwick, of course, calling 3x out of the small blind, has a fair amount of aces in his range, but he's got plenty of other stuff too.
So many other stuff. And you would actually think a lot of Chidwick's non-suited aces anywhere are mostly three bets, right?
Yeah.
Because like he doesn't have ace nine off here, right?
No, I would certainly not think so.
And you might even assume that ace jack off is a three bet.
You like, might assume that, yeah.
So like it's suited aces mostly, and it's all the other stuff. So this is like such an easy bet. Also, we clearly have a range advantage, even if he has suited aces, right?
Yep.
Except for ace four and ace five.
Whatever. So Wu breaks protocol a little bit here. Doesn't go full pot. He bets 56 and then 98, which
is still
pretty big on a dry board that's ace high.
Where Steven Chidwick does not ever rate to have like a deuce or a three. I guess he could have ace deuce or ace three in his hand, but like very few deuces and threes are in play here. And 6-7, I guess possible, but not, it's only 6-7 suited, right?
But this is sizing down for Wu. But we can talk about fundamentally why it would probably be better to bet smaller in this scenario, which is pretty simple. It's a dry board. We have a range advantage. We're gonna get pretty binary decisions from Chidwick. It's not like it's Chidwick against Foxen where he's going to have to like float with King 10 with two back doors. He's probably not going to do that too often in this
especially
in this
out
spot.
Of position. Yeah.
Yeah. So we could bet like 35K and get probably the same results.
Yeah. I mean, we could probably bet 28K and get the same results, right? We just don't have to bet much at all here.
Yeah.
We might be able to get 24K and get the same results.
But,
so.
You know, Wu's style is to go big.
I mean, that's probably why Chidwick called with this hand in the small blind, right? Because He was counting on this kind of a thing. So.
Yep. And, of course, Chidwick has only one option here if he wants to play the hand well, which is to call.
Yeah.
Right? You can't really justify a raise, and you certainly can't justify a fold.
It's pretty beautiful that this is a rainbow board, too. Like, yeah. we're in good shape against his range.
It's
right
pretty
now.
Unlucky based on how active Wu has been if Wu has us beat here. If he has ace king or ace queen or a set or something, it's just pretty unlucky.
One of the things that sucks also is Wu's size is big enough if he's going to bet pot or near pot on turn a lot. The fact that he didn't bet pot on flop maybe is good because if he goes pot, pot, and then bets the river, like it could be kind of all the chips. You know, we could be just getting all in here, which isn't really what we want from just ace jack with one pair.
Not in this tournament.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like we can't really stand that much heat. Now, maybe Stephen Chidwick can, but most people can't.
I mean, he still, even though he's playing 300Ks on the regular, he still cares about the main event, of course.
Of course, but I'm saying like he may be more willing to just go with his read slash like what he thinks is right as opposed to like, it's the main event, I must preserve my tournament, you know?
Well, that could be what's right in some cases.
I understand, but I'm saying he's not going to JC Tran it, you know? JC Tran, who like famously makes ridiculous folds, he's done it multiple times in the main event to preserve his tournament life and shows everyone even. It's like, what are you doing, man?
Right.
And people just bluff him without thinking about it because it's so easy.
Anyway, Chidwick
calls. Great. Which,
great. 210K in the pot.
Okay.
The turn is just, it's just so, it's like a warm loaf right out of the oven, and you put a little bit of butter on there. It's like Thanksgiving dinner, although Chidwick is British, but he gets it.
He's, you know, they have Boxing Day.
Yeah, so they probably have loaves and butter.
I think so. I mean, the war hit them hard, but.
Boris Johnson branded butter.
Morris Johnson?
Boris Johnson.
Boris Johnson.
Bojo. Brandon Butter.
Bojo. I like that.
Get your Bojo.
Never heard
down
that
down at the BOGO.
Did you just make up Bojo? Is that a thing?
I don't know if it's a thing or not. I used to say it as a joke.
I like it.
Yeah. Anyway, he's not important anymore. Unrelated. Stephen Chidwick turns a jack. It's a jack of spades. So now all those worries kind of melt away like the butter on the roll.
This show has gotten so political. It's crazy.
Oh, it's insanely political. I said Bojo. So, you know.
What a turn card.
Yeah, now you can feel very comfortable calling down.
Oh, my God. It's, like, hard to imagine a scenario where we're not going to go call.
The unfortunate thing for Chidwick is that Wu did turn some showdown value. So he might not get the opportunity to get three barrels out of Wu.
Yeah.
Like, if Wu had, you know, 8-9 suited, who knows what happens. But Wu has jack 10. Mm. I think there's, I'm not saying a big one, but more of an argument now for leading than there was on the flop. What do you think?
Well, the argument is we want to make sure we get value out of an ace that may be checking back, like the medium aces.
Yeah, like ace 8 suited type hands.
I would think that mostly we're not going to get two streets of value against those hands anyway from here on. We've already gotten one street, so it'd be three streets, right? But I mean, from the turn on, two streets of value is like max value, essentially. I guess a check raise, we could get three streets of value. But how are we going to get that?
No.
I would think ace 8 is not going to go call very often against us.
I agree.
So I don't know if a lead is so powerful. If he's going to fold all his misses anyway, and he's often betting pot on the turn, I think we're supposed to check and let him do his thing.
The issue that I see, and I don't know enough about Wu to say if this is going to work with Wu, but just put me in Wu's seat for a second, or you in Wu's seat, is that like we're not going to bet that many of our worst hands. The only ones we might bet are combo draws that we picked up and ace-king, ace-queen.
Right.
Like we're probably not betting ace-10 and less at this point on the turn.
Why not just check it back?
Yeah. Yeah, so it kind of sucks against most players that we're going to get a lot of checkbacks from all of the hands that we have completely crushed.
Understood, but at the same point, ace-10 is drawing dead against us. You know, like a lot of these hands are drawing dead, and if we're only going to get one street anyway, why lead now? Why not give him a chance to bluff if he has something like king-queen and decides to take another shot? King-queen of spades is going to bet.
You know? Well, sure.
There's some hands that are going to bet, and maybe he's the kind of guy who's just going to bet anyway, because based on what you were telling me, and admittedly, it's not that much data.
Right.
But he may at least err in that direction, which makes me just like when we finally have a hand that we have no fear with, I really want to give him some rope. So I understand what you're saying about betting, but if we can only get one street of value from here on out anyway against the worst aces, unless he miracles, you know, a 10 on the river or a 9 on the river or whatever for aces up, then I mostly just want to let him bet. And if he checks, fine, we'll get value out of those aces on the river.
And I see that argument with Woo specifically. Yes. But if it's us and somehow one of us bet 56K on the flop.
Oh, a lead here is pretty interesting.
Because we are not bluffing the turn once we bet 56K on the flop and get called.
Against Steven Chidwick, who flatted the small blind. Right, on a 3X open. On
the ace 4-5 rainbow. Yeah.
It's like I guess he can have 2-9 sometimes in call, but like.
I'm not taking another shot.
Right. And if you have ace 8, you're also checking that back. Like you're saying, ace 10, you're checking
but
back.
But it is Woo. It's not us. So who knows? It's different. Maybe he just fires anyway. I don't know what he would do if he didn't turn a jack. He might fire with his 8-9 suiteds and his 6-7 suiteds and whatever.
Yeah.
But he did turn a jack and he does the reasonable thing and checks back.
Yeah. It's one of those weird checkbacks where you're like, I probably need help, but I'm going to check because if he's probably calling with his ace anyway if he has one.
I can really hope that he has nines. Really, really hope. Although he probably never does, but I can really hope that he does.
To Wu's credit, this is not perfect, but close to a game theory disaster spot to bet.
Yes,
right?
It is.
So he's right to check for sure, and sort of we'll figure it out in the river if forced to. Hopefully, either we improve or Chidwick checks again from Wu's point of view, right? Yeah. And if he checks again, I think we just check it back unless we've improved and hope we win.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, man, this hand gets so interesting. Well, I'm so excited to talk about the river.
Okay, good.
I love this hand just because, because of the card that comes and because of the players that they are. It's just, I love this. Mm. The King of Spades.
Yeah.
All right, so the board now reads Ace of Spades, Four of Diamonds, Five of Clubs, Jack of Spades, King of Spades. It's among the worst cards in the deck for Steven Chidwick.
It ain't great. Queen 10 miracles its way there. Spades miracle their way back door. Ace King gets there.
Yeah.
You may think Ace King is usually betting the turn. You may think Spades are usually betting the turn, but probably not always for either one.
King King gets there too.
Yes. King King makes some sense based on this guy.
It may be the literal worst card in the deck.
Yeah.
Maybe the Queen of Spades. Now, this is probably worse because if Wu continues on the turn with flush draws, with some flush draws and not with others, the most likely one he's going to continue with is the nut flush draw.
Yes, that's right.
And this removes that from his range.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good point.
Still, we have a very strong hand with aces up.
We have to bet to try and get value from a worse ace, don't we? Now, is it going to call? We can't bet that much. Because I'm worried ace eight is going to fold if we bet.
And it's possible that Wu found a check back with ace king on the turn and we're just valuing ourselves.
Yep. But that's okay because we're not going to fold to a bet anyway, right?
No.
So putting in one street of value here, whether we're the better or the caller, doesn't matter. It's just about are we getting more value when we bet versus when we check call?
All right. So you want to bet small?
I think I want to bet small to get called by ace eight.
All right, well, I'm going to tell you what Chidwick does, and I want you to figure out why, because he's better than you. So he bets 140K into 210.
Yeah.
That is not small.
No.
So what's going on?
Possibility number one, he knows Wu is kind of a station. Right?
That's probably the best possibility.
Yeah. So if the guy's a station and he's price insensitive, because most stations are, why would you bet 80K when you can get 60K more? You get five more blinds for the same price, essentially, right, from your point of view, because you assume you're winning here until you get other information.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you go for those five extra blinds? If he's going to call with essentially the same frequency with ace 8, you'd be a fool not to bet 140.
Right.
That's my best guess. The only other guess I have is if you bet small on this card, it's almost weird. I guess it could be a blocking bet.
Yeah.
But that's all. Otherwise, you've got a really good hand, right?
Yeah.
And so betting this more normal amount maybe has more bluffs in it, but I don't think that's what Chidwick's doing. I think it's the first thing.
Yeah, probably.
Against this opponent specifically.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
All right, so Wu's should just be done with the hand. This is an easy fold.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he blocks Queen 10. Who cares?
But wait, but Grant said this was like, he loved this hand in the street. He's
Wu doesn't even have...
He's so smart.
Wu doesn't even have a spade in his hand.
Why would he say that?
Wu raises to 500K, which is almost all of Stephen Chidwick's chips.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to start by saying this is a bad raise. This is...
Because he doesn't have a spade in his hand.
He doesn't have a spade in his hand.
It feels like he needs to have the 10 of spades.
If he had Jack 10 with a 10 of spades, I'd be pretty interested in this raise.
I agree.
Yeah. But he has no spade in his hand. Now, Chidwick is unlikely to have spades, especially because the ace of spades was the only spade on the flop. He could have ace X of spades in a different scenario, but in this scenario, the ace of spades was on the flop.
I challenge you to come up with anything except the 6-7 of spades that Chidwick can have as a flush. That makes sense that he check calls the flop with.
6-8 of spades,
that's,
potentially.
That's maybe the other one.
Yeah.
Right. And that means 7-8 of spades,
right.
I guess. There might be three combos, maybe. So he might fold those for 56K, by the way, on the flop out of position.
Right. So giving Wu maximum credit, it's possible that we recognize that Chidwick can't really have a flush very often.
Right.
And the next question has to be, can I have a flush very often?
Well, that's harder.
Not as much as you would like, but more than Chidwick at least.
Wu can have some flushes, I think, because Wu could have something like, let's just play it out, 8-9 of spades.
Yeah.
He opens it. He bets kind of big-ish, not from his point of view, but from our point of view on the flop. Chidwick calls and is like, oh, Chidwick has a lot of aces here. Jack comes on the turn. You pick up some equity, but you're like, I'm never getting this through.
Yeah.
So why would I bet? I'm going to take my free card and see if I can improve.
Yep.
Because I believe Chidwick has a lot of aces and he's going to station me because he's not afraid. He's not like some of these other guys in the main event who are just going to fold if I bet big on the turn. He's going to call a lot. Why try? That's the pathway anyway for Wu to have it.
It's a reasonable story. And, you know, if you think deeply enough about it, I think it's actually reasonable for Wu to have Queen 10 as well. Because Chidwick very rarely, if ever, has spades. Maybe he never has spades.
Right.
And he never has Queen 10 himself. He never has a straight. There's no chance Chidwick has Queen 10.
No chance.
So you could pretty much raise Queen 10 with impunity.
Yeah, I don't think Chidwick can even have Queen 10 of spades, right? Out of position for 56K, he's probably just going to throw it away in the main.
Yeah.
I think he just throws it away on the flop.
Yep.
I mean, so maybe we don't need the 10 of spades in our hand if we can effectively block all of Chidwick's spades anyway, except for three combos which don't have the 10 of spades in them anyway.
Right.
It's that we don't need it.
The 10 of spades doesn't help us at all.
Yeah, so never mind.
Yeah.
So now we're right back to, hey, it's cool we have a 10 in our hand.
Yeah. Although Chidwick doesn't have
He never
have
has queen 10 anyway.
It doesn't matter. The blocker is irrelevant.
Yep. The blockers are actually irrelevant here. This is cool. So, and this, by the way, is all born out of Wu's sizing pre-flop and on the flop.
Yes,
right?
It is.
If he went much smaller, then Chidwick can have all these combos again.
And the dryness of the flop.
Yes. That's right, of course. But we're able to make more definitive range-based assumptions because of the sizing that Wu's doing,
if we give Wu maximum credit, this is a badass play.
I mean, I think it's a badass play. Now, that doesn't mean to say I don't know if it's a good play, but it's fucking cool as shit to actually do this. And if he thought through the stuff we just said, this guy basically can't ever have a straight and can't ever have a flush.
Yeah.
Then why wouldn't I race? Like, that's enough of, like...
Can Chidwick call with anything that he can have? Like, can he actually call with anything that he can have? Against Mr. Wu in the main event, not against Alex Foxen in a 300K?
Well, here's the thing. If we had a set of fives, and that king comes on the river...
We being
Chidwick.
Okay.
That king comes on the river, and we bet 140. Is it possible... This is the question we have to ask ourselves, right? Is it possible Wu is ever raising ace-king like this?
I don't know.
If Wu's able to do all the stuff we were just saying, where we essentially never have flushes and straights, if he's able to figure that out in his head,
he would still be worried about
losing to a few sets.
He would still be worried about those sets.
It's fours and fives. He might also be worried about what's going to call.
Yeah,
right. I think practically we don't see someone with ace king here make that raise, except the dumbest of the dumb.
Yeah, like, I don't think
the lowest
so.
Of the low in the main event specifically. Yeah. Right, where when the king of spades comes on the river, they just are going to call.
Yeah, for
also,
sure.
Also, it isn't like Chidwick bet 50K. He bet 2/3 pot.
Yeah.
We're just going to call this, right? Like, it's such a big disaster to be wrong here, to raise to 500K, and my ace-king is beat by 2/5, you know, when I just could have just called, and, like, because I'm losing to some things. I have enough value I can call.
In a perfect world, Wu just made the perfect play. Like, an unbeatable, doesn't matter what your hand is, wrecked you play.
You can never call with any of your range. Now, maybe then Stephen Chidwick is like, well, understanding that, I do have to call with some of my range.
But
we'll get to that.
But I don't think he does. Like, in the main event against Mr. fucking Wu, like, he's not going to call with...
You say Mr. fucking Wu as if Mr. Wu is like a tourist, but in some ways he clearly is, but... But if he's this active, the question is, how active is he, right?
I didn't see when he got the name Mr. Wu or why he's the big, I saw a few of the hands that he played there. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't see what led up to that. I don't know if he'd been raising rivers or anything.
If he was raising the river a lot and he did this one too, there'd probably be a YouTube compilation of it, honestly.
Yeah.
Because this one alone, there's they cut it out and made
right.
it.
Right. So
video,
I don't think he was.
Probably
doing.
Not.
Yeah.
So that makes it really interesting and cool, right?
It's possible that Chidwick literally cannot call with anything that he ever gets here with.
I mean, if that's true, then this is the world's greatest raise, essentially, right? And our hand is literally irrelevant as well. Like, both hands are irrelevant.
Yes.
The actual holdings, because Chidwick can never call, and if we can recognize that, and our blockers are irrelevant as well. If we had the seven of spades, it would be a good blocker. We don't have that, right? But no other blockers basically matter. The 6-7 8 of spades are the only blockers I'd even be interested in having here. So, wow.
So, it's possible this is button clicking Wu just like doing whatever Wu does.
Yeah.
But if we want to give maximum credit, it is cool as shit because Chidwick tank, he does tank forever because, you know, you got to question the story a little bit, right? Like, how do you have spades? How do you have queen 10? The answer is queen 10 makes a lot of sense and spades are a little less likely.
Right. But also could be there. I wonder if Wu's even thinking more expansively than this in terms of what he could raise his, what he could raise here in terms of range wise on the river.
Like Jack, Jack plus.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that's correct, but like, oh, I rivered ace king. I rivered king king and ha ha ha. I can have those hands. And guess what? You can't have those either, Stevie. So like, not only can you not have anything to call with, but the top of my range is so much stronger than the top of yours. It's crazy.
I mean, it is.
It is. But like, ace king shouldn't be part of that raising range, and jack jack and king king probably shouldn't. Like king king should be a call here, right?
No, I think kings you can raise for all the same reasons you can raise queen 10. You can raise jacks, kings, and aces.
Because
what is
because he just can't ever have you beat. Yeah, yeah, king king. That's true. That is true. But then is he going to call with like what can he? If he can't call with anything,
it's basically a free roll.
How is it a free roll? It's not a free roll if it's a negative free roll. Is what it is.
Like, I mean, if he can sometimes call.
Well, we just said he literally can't call with anything worse. And if he can ever have spades ever, he's not going to fold that. So then you're negative free rolling yourself. Or it's just a completely meaningless raise that because you can never get paid or get called.
Yeah.
And there's no point in doing that either then, right?
So there's no point in raising the nuts, the royal flush?
Well, this wouldn't be the nuts, would it?
No, but I'm saying.
Well, no, because.
For the same reasons.
Well, we both said we think it's possible Steven could have 6-7 of spades.
I guess it's possible, yeah.
If he can possibly have that and he's always folding everything worse, we should definitely not raise. Right?
Yeah.
Even if there's a 1 in 1,000 chance of him having it, what's the point?
So you're saying we shouldn't raise queen 10 then?
If we think 2-5s are going to fold, then we should not raise queen 10. What's the point?
Yeah. I believe that Chidwick probably thinks Wu is raising queen 10. I'm just going to put that out there.
Okay.
But yeah, I hear what you're saying. I still think... In this case, it's just an amazing play in a vacuum. It's not going to work over and over and over again if they play together more.
Oh,
but they're not going to play together more.
No, this is like, it's really sweet. Now, let's talk about Chidwick's decision here.
Okay.
Okay, so there's one level of it, which is like, do I just fold literally 100% of my range?
Yeah.
Against some opponents, you always do that, of course.
Right? Yeah.
Some guys, it doesn't matter. We don't care about distribution. We don't care about blocks. We don't care about anything.
I think Chidwick probably puts Wu in that category.
I don't know if he does or not. He tanks forever. I guess he doesn't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he just given himself a really good shot to like figure it all out, but ultimately putting Wu in that category at the end.
Right. But if he thinks Wu never has bluffs and would always have him beat and always has it, he wouldn't tank forever. He wouldn't use up like... You know, he just wouldn't. Like, he would fold quicker because although it's the main event.
Yeah, take your time.
Extensions, right? Yeah. You can go as long as you want, I guess. Also, because it's stream, maybe he wants to show anyone who's paying attention that he's not easy to be moved off these kinds of hands.
Yeah.
So actually, there's metagame value in this, too. But let's talk past that for a second. Where is this hand in Chidwick's distribution?
It's pretty high. He does have fours. He does have fives. He might have 6-7 of spades. It's unclear to us.
Right. I think he can have 6-7 of spades.
The only reason he wouldn't is if he didn't call preflop.
Right. I don't think he can necessarily. I don't know if he can have 6-8 of spades or 7-8 of spades.
Yeah.
I feel like 6-7. He's got to have 6-7 of spades.
Okay.
I feel like.
So he's got one combo of a flush.
Right.
So that's better. He doesn't have any queen 10.
Nope.
He doesn't have any sets of jacks, kings, or aces.
No way. He's got five sets of five, sets of fours.
And then that's it. This is the next one.
And none of those hands that we just mentioned. Have any blocker value at all?
No.
Are there any hands that do have blocker value that we could actually show up with here that we would have bet the river with? I don't know if there are.
I don't think so. I mean,
if we didn't bet the river, sure. But we bet the river.
Would we bet ace queen with the queen of spades?
I don't think so. Maybe if we think Wu's opening a lot of aces and is going to call, but you know doesn't want to, maybe we'd bet to get called by a worse ace.
If we can have ace queen, which is hard because we'd have to not three bet it, which is more likely to three bet than ace jack, obviously.
Yeah, we're much more likely.
And we're less likely to bet it than ace jack on the river. But if we have that, that has blocker value, the queen of spades.
Yeah. Okay. So that hand then we could at least consider calling with, right?
Yeah.
But would we actually in practice?
No.
Unless we think Wu is pretty out there and pretty spewing, like, you know, Benny Spindler type, you know, who's going to actually just take a lot of shots like this.
Stephen Chidwick knows that he doesn't have enough of a sample size of Wu to make any decision like that.
I mean, he's been playing with him for a few hours, so yeah. Assuming he hasn't seen, you know, Wu do this a bunch, he, of course, if he's seen him do it twice, it's not enough. He needs to see him do it like four times.
Which is hard to see.
Really hard to see, yeah. You know, and I guess you could see if he was raising a lot of turns, also raising a lot of flops, maybe at some point you're like, okay, this guy's just putting on way too many chips. But even ace queen, you just have one pair, and I'd be worried about, like, what if this guy is raising a wider range for value than I would assign him to be doing? You know,
so
what if he actually has ace king and is raising for value because he doesn't know what he's doing? That would be a real problem.
I think what you were getting at though was like, is there a better hand to call with?
Yeah,
and I think if we have ace queen with the queen of spades, that is the better hand to call with.
Right, because we beat the same value and the same bluffs with that we do with ace jack.
Yeah.
And at least it blocks the straights and the flushes. And we can't really have ace 10 off here. Like, we just can't have it. So it's just ace queen with the queen of spades. And then, but we might fold 100% of our range anyway in this spot.
So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, Chidwick folds, and I don't see how you can make any other decision based on the information that we have here. And it's just a street poker badass fucking play by Mr. Wu, and it might be extremely well thought out. It's possible.
Yeah, yeah. You can only do this against thinking players, though, right? Because, like, there's some people in World Series events who are just going to click the call button here.
Well, in the main event, they're going to be scared.
They're going to be more scared in the main event. But, you know, some people don't know that their hand isn't really strong. They think their hand is really strong here when they have ace-jack.
It's especially impressive if Wu knows who Chidwick is. He's on the feature table at the main event. He's an amateur. He's just fucking bombing it on the river in a very intense way against Stephen Chidwick.
It's likely he does, just because if they've been on this feature table for a while, there's probably been interviews, there's probably been people you know, talking about him or talking to him in particular ways. So if he's paying any attention, he probably knows.
Yeah.
Also, it's day four of the main event. Like, you can sort of look up people pretty easily. And I mean, you can do that anytime, but you can get all the names of who you're playing with, especially when you're on the stream, and look it up super easy.
This type of hand is great for poker. We want more of hands. More
I really hope Wu actually did all the stuff we were just talking about and be like, oh, he has 7-6 of spades and that's it.
Yeah.
One combo. Everything else is great. And, you know, for safety, I have the 10, which doesn't matter, but I happen to have a 10 too. Cool. I have a jack in my hand, by the way. I block ace jack.
Yeah.
Just in case. Not that he would ever call it that anyway.
This hand makes me happy.
Yeah.
It brings me joy.
I feel you. Hey. First time, no rehearsal. I say fuck the second take. 90s baby scratching the vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second dates, I'm the rapper most.